Welcome to Podnet's Computer Repair Podcast, episode number 244, Contingency Plans. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. This is our live call-in show for computer repair techs. We answer your questions on running and operating your computer repair business. The call-in number is 1-888-697-0162. Let me introduce the co-host. We have Chris Carruthers from the Remote Support Tech Team. How are you doing, Chris?
Caffeinated and ready to roll, Jeff.
Awesome. And also joining us, who haven't seen her in a while, is Shayna Pittman from Red Agent Solutions. How are you doing, Shayna?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually afraid to touch my computer at this point.
Yeah, just don't touch your computer because we don't want to see you blink out and blink back in again. But, you know, right. If you do, no big deal. Good to have you. All right, let's go ahead and start by sharing a tip or story that we could learn from. And Chris, we're going to shoot it over to you.
Actually, really quick story is that no matter where you are, there's usually business to be had. And we all need to remember this. So recently I went to a convention as a customer. I was having a good time taking a look at the wares, ran into somebody that I had done business with in the past who introduced me to somebody else. Long story short, I'm going to have a small booth at a convention. Then they're looking for some custom stuff to come in that we're going to be spending the next year putting together. Just no matter where you are, make sure you have some business cards on you. You got to have your business face on and be dressed at least semi-professionally, like nice one of these polos, because you never know when you have to make a pitch.
Very cool. And what's your business face look like?
be happy, be smiling, right? If you're seen out in public arguing with the kids, then, you know, that doesn't usually bode well, I guess.
That's a good point. Okay. Have your game face on. All right. Very good. Thank you for that. And Shayna, what do you got for us this week?
Actually, I got two. I want to go off what Chris just said, because now I'm actually learning to be a little bit more social. So I will be at a store and just give out, just in case you don't like your old tech, here I am, or something like that. Just kind of be a little jokey with it. But they're like, generates a conversation. They're like, oh, you know, I do have this component of the computer, but that opens up opportunity to, you know, get a new customer. So just with that alone is, you know, an opportunity. And then as far as one of my new customers, I think it's, if you're going to provide a managed service solution to a residential, especially if they're in the range, explain your tool. Because at first, she was very paranoid from her previous experiences with just having a computer hacked or whatever she wanted to call it. So she thought my tool, something bad. And I had to go back to her and explain to her, this is safe. This is blocked. And all good, you're safe, and explain some of the functions, what you'll see as far as notifications, because she didn't understand that and she never seen it before, so she thought it was a threat more than her computer being secure. So definitely want to notifications and give a little education or training, because I guess I didn't think to do that day. It was my first time implementing that Kubuntu with the whole thing with monitoring and MCSoft. I think you probably took a look at that right there. So that was my first client, but I didn't think to just run through it real quick with her. And that was an experience, but now she feels better about it and she trusts me. But definitely if you're going to do something like that, then what they're going to be seeing at the corner of that screen, because they all think that, you know, in her eyes, it's another threat or some weird thing that she needed to delete it, because she ended up deleting or messing it up and I had to reinstall everything.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a good point. You definitely want to let your customers know what you're putting on your computer or on their computer so that when they look at it and it's new to them, they know exactly where it's coming from and what it's for. So that's a very good point. I don't really have a tip or story this week. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and move into, since we're getting this late in the season, I'm going to go ahead and move into our real quick ad. and then we'll move on to our main topic for today. Right now, for those of you that don't know, in about 3 weeks, the DC Unconvention in Washington, D.C. is going to be going on. All right. And the dates are September 16th and 17th. And it is an IT conference for techs and business owners reimagined. Learn from fellow techs and business owners. Get business strategies that work in the real world. Discover new tech. If you're an owner, operator in managed services, IT consulting, or a break-fix tech, this is the place for you. And if you're not all three, you're lying. But anyways, get your hotel and tickets now. Only 100 tickets are available, and I know a lot of them are gone. I don't know how many tickets are exactly left, but my understanding is they are down to the last bit. So if you want to do that, go to unconvention.io. You guys can still get there if you're close in the area or you want to travel by car, train, whatever. You can still get there and still get to this conference. And I would just tell you to invest in yourself. You're going to have people like Matthew Rodella there from the Computer Business Marketing Podcast. And also from, you're going to have Mike Smith from the Mike Tech Show. You're going to have the Podnuts Pro trio there, the Triple M's. So Marvin, Martin, and Matt. So if you guys listen to that show, all three will be there. And I know Marvin's got some things that he's presenting, and it should be a good time. If you want to get a chance to meet and greet a lot of these different people, Paco LeBron will be there. John Dubinsky will be there. So a lot of people that you guys listen to all the time will be there. And you get to actually look them in the eye, shake their hand, and see what's going on in their world and have a real conversation with them. Plus, you'll get to meet some other people maybe you've never met before, and you'll be able to, you know, rub shoulders, trade stories. And this is always a great time to boost the things that you're doing in your business because you're learning from other people, you're helping other people, and it's always a win-win situation. So definitely go over to unconvention.io, get your ticket, get there however you can. If you don't have someplace to stay, get in contact with somebody, and I'm sure you can find somebody to room with or whatever to you know, to be able to get out there and make that happen. All right, so let's go on into our main topic for today. And this came up from Mr. Michael Cooley, better known as Taz. And yes, Michael, I did use your full name.
Woo.
But anyways, Taz called me the other day and said, I've got this story about something that happened. He had ordered a service, and something had happened to the person that was going to do the service. I can't remember something about that, something with their heart. I'm not sure if it was a stroke, heart attack, something, but it was something pretty serious. And there was no contingency plan in place in order to have somebody else come in and finish that job he had already quoted and took money on. And so what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about that. What happens when you get sick or you have something bad like a heart attack, et cetera, cancer, whatever? What do you do in your business? And not only that, but I think a lot of these are going to be pretty simple answers, but something we definitely need to think about. Also, what are some of the things we can do and what are our contingency plans when things don't go right? What's our backup plan? What do we do? Do we always just wing it, or do we have something in place that says, if this doesn't work this way, here is what I'm going to do to solve the problem? Because I think you could save yourself a lot of time and money by having a contingency plan ahead of time versus after the fact or while it's happening. So let's go ahead and talk about, Chris, let's start off with you. But as far as what do you do in your business if you are no longer there for some unforeseen circumstances?
Oh, sorry, what do I do specifically?
No, just make something up. I'm just saying. Yes, you.
Yes, me. I have somebody to take it over. That flat out, that's what's going to happen. If I were taken out of commission, there will be a butt in my seat taking over and dealing with it.
Now, how did you come up with that?
Well, not going to go too far into a lot of the backstory on it, but I know this person very well. I know that they can do the job properly. So if if I had to pick somebody to replace me, it was that person. So I made those arrangements ahead of time. I have other people that know what's going on so that, you know, and I have one person has my password for the newsletters. So, you know, there can be an email blast sent out saying, hey, it's going to take a day before we can get, you know, whatever up and running because we'll have to pull that person in. So, yeah, you know, big notification blast has to go out to everybody saying that, hey, we're going to be down for 12 hours or however long it's going to take to get that person up and running. Introduction. Email blast, and then that's it. All the phones and everything get forwarded to the right person, and you're done.
Now, obviously, somebody has to have access to a whole lot of passwords, I would imagine.
I would imagine that if you were somebody like me, you would have a safe, and in that safe will be a USB drive, and in that USB drive is going to be a text file, and in that text file is going to be a password for LastPass.
Okay. So somebody could get in your LastPass account, and be able to get the passwords for all. And obviously, if you have somebody that is you already have in mind and it's already trained, then that person is going to know what to do with that information.
Correct. There's also a lot of documentation, right? So everything is already documented. So, you know, in a less than ideal situation, if somebody else had to take over for some unforeseen reason, then there'd be some stumbling, but they wouldn't be waiting into the dark. So, you know, you make sure that your processes are all in place. You make sure that everything's documented and that somebody can access all of that information.
Okay. I like it.
Now, if I can add one more thing, though, not everything is going to be long term. Some things are going to be short term. So, you know, you brought up a heart attack. There's a pretty good chance, especially with modern medicine, that if you have a heart attack, that you're not going to be out forever. So, you know, if you were in a position where maybe you just had to take it easy, maybe you're not going to work 60 hours, 80 hours a week anymore. You're going to wind up cutting back down to 30 like a normal person.
Only in France.
Right. Well, okay. A normal look, if your doctor tells you to take it easy and you only work 30 hours a week, your doctor wants you to do less, okay? 30 is pushing it on a light load. But there are insurances that you can purchase to deal with stuff like that. And I'm blanking completely right now on the name of the insurance, but talk to your insurance broker. I think it's like director's insurance or something along those lines, where if you are physically unable to work, a check from the insurance company is made out to your business and you can use that money to hire somebody or whoever is helping to take care of things for you can use that money to hire somebody in order to be able to make sure that your customers are taken care of in the short term while you get better. So there are a lot of options there. You just have to have it.
Okay. I like it. All right, Shayna, what about you?
My concern is my clients because, I know a lot of them won't do nothing without me. Like my word is pretty much their next move, but I've had this idea of creating like a book for a lot of the business, you know, guys, like as far as I call it the what if section, you know, because a lot of the issues they have is small things they could have done themselves, but they don't think about it. And what happens if I do get sick or I'm not able to even, you know, receive calls for whatever reason? They can't contact me. What will they be able to do in that time where they could probably fix it themselves? So I have been logging stuff where I might create like a quick look at this. Check if it's that and move to the next thing. So having that type of documentation in their SOP book or whatever they want to call it, whatever they have, just kind of amended to that. So they at least know what to do if they can't contact me. Because a lot of the things, like I said, that's it. That's my concern is if they're taken care of without me, then I'm good. And as far as I'll say administration wise, like the invoicing and all that. Yeah, you might, I am looking for somebody who I trust. Right now, I'm still kind of talking to a few people that are interested in supporting just that factor and their scheduling. So that is in a process because I do think about what will happen to me if, you know, anything could happen. And you definitely want to have that type of insurance. I have been speaking with my accountant as far as maybe getting insurance for something like that, like Chris was talking about. But just on the marketing phase is something you also want to think about, too, because if you're sick, you're not going to be emailing people, marketing, blasting, and Facebooking your ads and all that stuff. So I have taken a leap of, I'm not sure if you heard of ThriveHive. I would like to say it's an all-in-one marketing solution. It has a code you can put on your website as far as performance, email marketing, Facebook, blog posts, all that stuff you can schedule and just put out there weeks beforehand, you know. And that's another thing I want to call it, work ahead. So if you know you got to do something and it's due Friday and you have a little time to do it Tuesday, get it out the way, because you never know when something's going to happen. And at least you know that's been done. So if you do try to complete tasks, those priority tasks, then that will help alleviate a lot of the stress if something, anything could go out of wrong. You might have to help somebody else out of the blue. You want to have certain tasks like that already done or completed. Since I'm still a little new, I'm still trying to figure out those things and have those questions answered, because I do want to be prepared when I grow, and I don't want to have like a million customers and they're all screwed, you know, then this is a whole catastrophe by itself.
Right. No, I agree with what you guys are saying. There's a lot of truth to that. And I think this is one of those things is it, when you're younger, you look at your life and you go, nothing will ever happen to me. And as you get older, you start to become wiser and you look at your situation and you go, well, something could happen to me, whether I want to believe it or not. These are just the way it is. Now, from my standpoint, the way I look at it, yeah, my customers would be hosed, but you know, if I died or something, I don't have to deal with it anyway, so I really don't care.
So that's Jeff's stance.
That's my contingency plan. Hey, I'm out.
I thought that was your contingency plan.
No, there's a lot to be said for that. And here is where I think the difficulty really comes in, though, is that it's hard to find, or I shouldn't say it's hard. It's interesting to find somebody that you trust enough that you could throw into that role that you know is not going to take advantage of you, take advantage of your business. And especially like Chris was talking about, on a short-term basis. Because somebody could come in there and they could really, they can mess a lot of things up if they really wanted to, if you didn't know them and trust them to that degree. And so I think that's where a lot of people, we're a lot of times in this business out here working by ourselves. And for some reason, I'm trying to get this out of everybody's head, but a lot of business owners and technicians are still in this mindset. They're still in this competitive landscape mindset, which is a fallacy at best. But it's their reality. I don't believe it. I don't understand why other people believe it, but it is what it is. So I think, and I know if John was here, and he's actually out on a few jobs over the next couple of days, that's why he couldn't be here. But John Dubinsky would tell you that he has somebody from another company that he likes and he trusts and could take over his business and do what they need to do. So that's definitely a special relationship that you have to have with somebody. And I think you could work with somebody where it would be the reciprocal too. If either or happened to one side or the other person could jump in and be able to help out and take care of that person. Yeah.
And I mean, people do that now too, not even just for emergencies, but for a vacation.
Right.
You know, when John goes on vacation, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that that person that you're talking about takes all of the emergency calls while he's on vacation.
Absolutely.
Right. So, you know, there are short-term things like that. But we got to remember that, you know, yeah, not all of us are naturally social, and that's unfortunate, because you really wind up losing out on making that kind of a connection with somebody. So, you know, the unconvention is a great way to get over, you know, that hump and to start meeting people. CompTIA is another place where you can really start meeting these, you know, individual computer company owners that might even be in your area that you can really form that bond with.
Absolutely. Not only that, plus we have a show here that is open to most techs to be able to to come on and talk about. Not we have our show for Podnets Daily, which is a show. It's just a tech to tech show talking about your business, how you do things, because everybody thinks they do everything the same. I haven't met a person yet that goes, here's my process. And man, that is exactly the same as John's, Shana's, Chris's, Paco's, whoever. It's like everybody does things a little bit differently, and I learn a little bit from everybody. So it's a win-win situation. So there's that show there. Then there's the roundtable here where we get on. Now, if those that don't remember, Shana came on a Podnets Daily, I don't know how long ago it was. It was a while back. She's been on a couple of these panels. And she has been listening to this show for years. If she's been listening to it as long as back when Steve Cherubino had it, that goes all the way back to 2008. That's a long time ago.
Yeah.
And she just now, within the last, I don't know, probably been a year and a half or something like that, decided, I'm going to come on the show. And she did. Now, Shana, from your own standpoint, how easy was it to come on a show and just share what you do in your business? And how easy also was it to come on this show and just kind of be a part of the conversation?
Well, as far as just the daily podcast, can you hear me?
Yep. We got you.
All right, because you went out for a bit. But I felt it was more easier for me at that point because there was no live. There was no video. Me and you talked. It was already that icebreaker right there. And with you being very humble and approachable, it was like we just was talking. It was easier for me than when I received the email like, hey, get on the live show. I'm like, but at that time, I'm like, you know what? Okay. You know, with listening to you guys all the time, I felt already comfortable. You know, we're on the same level at some point. So being live and just not picturing millions of people watching me, it was easy. Like I said, once you got into us, we were just talking. It was a conversation more of us just, you know, trying to promote secretively of what we do and stuff like that. It was a conversation. It was easier for us to just be on the same level and be, you know, on a friendship level, I would say.
Right. And, you know, going back to that, too, and I appreciate your candor on that. And just I love that people are taking the leap and just coming on and taking the time to share their information, which helps the audience that listens to this on a regular basis. I think it's a win-win. And you go back and you look at a lot of people that, I don't know, they're almost, I've had technicians tell me that they're more than willing to help people as long as they're not in their local area. And to me, it's kind of like, really? Like, you think you have some great secret that nobody absolutely knows about anywhere else, and that person's going to take that one little tidbit of information and just be able to knock you out of business. Okay. Never seen it happen, but that's great. So I think there's going back to our original conversation, talking about that contingency plan, I think it's hard sometimes for people to break free. But again, like Chris said, this is a great community. CompTIA's, you got the unconventions, you've got a community of techs that are more than willing, for the most part, to help people out. And even people that are getting started today. This is why we do these shows. If I wasn't helping people, there's absolutely, I don't really get a whole lot out of this. This is, I do it because I enjoy it. I enjoy tech. I enjoy the business. And I enjoy talking about it. So that's why I do it. And the number one thing is it helps other people. So I think moving past all that, though, I think our contingency plans are probably pretty much the same. Get somebody that you know, like, and trust, and give them access or keys to the kingdom so that they can take over temporarily or even in the worst case scenario, full time. Somehow there's a transition. There's somebody to take care of your customers. Because part of the thing that we're talking about and looking at is we're moving from this break fix mentality to the MSP model I just threw up in my mouth. And the MSP model is not a bad model. They're the managed services model, I should say. The managed services model creates a recurring revenue. In my opinion, it protects the customers more than the break-fix model of, hey, when it's been broken and not working well for the last 8 months, you'll finally bring it to me and I'll fix it. And it's fine. I make more money that way. It doesn't matter. Or you can pay me a smaller amount over a longer period of time, which will be able to give me the ability to keep your computer working great 365 days a year, unless a mechanical failure of some sort happens or whatever. But on, as far as on the software side, for the most part, everything's going to be running just the way it should. So as we start to grow this managed service business, we really have to start thinking about, what are we going to do if we're no longer around or we're no longer available to take care of this? So I think these are great things that, you know, again, great things we've talked about. And I think we've come up with some pretty simple solutions, but you just have to get out there and find that person, or even sometimes persons. Maybe you get together in a group. Hey, we're gonna create some sort of a contract or you know, a handshake agreement. If this happens, here's where my access is. Maybe you give the access to your significant other, and they can pass that on to the tech that's going to come in, so that maybe the keys to the kingdom are not out there all the time, which I think would be good. So there's many different ways to do it. You just have to find out a way that's going to work for you and that you're comfortable with. But I think it's something that definitely needs to be looked at. So with that, let's move into talking about, what are your contingency plans when something doesn't go right? Do you have a contingency plan, or do you do like most people and you just wing it? Chris?
Give me an example of something not going right.
Okay, you go in to repair a QuickBooks database, okay? And all in, it's not repairing. It's you, the information is not there. You're not sure what is your next step that you're going to do. Because normally you do QuickBook database recoveries all the time, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very simple for the most part, right?
Usually.
Okay. Usually. But on those occasions that it doesn't go right, what do you do? Do you have a plan already set in place, or do you just go, well, I've got choice A, B, C, D, E, depending on the situation?
Well, okay, so let's be honest, right? If this was already my customer, they'd have a backup. So, you know, because I'm going to go to the backup. If they don't have a backup, I'm going to go to Intuit. But between you and me, if I couldn't recover the database, chances are the Intuit people can't either. It's gone. There isn't a plan C. It's either repair, get it from the backup, or hope Intuit's got it.
Ooh, that's rough.
Right. But that customer has been told that they need to have a backup. So if they don't have a backup, there's not a whole lot that I can do about that.
Now, let's say that the backup didn't work.
Ooh.
Or you missed a little corruption that was in there and you didn't know.
Maybe I did. Maybe I did. And maybe somehow I can't go back to the version that was working, which if I were backing it up, I could, but let's pretend that that didn't work. Let's pretend that all of those things are my fault. Then that customer is going to sue me and my insurance company is going to give them a check. That's what's going to happen.
Okay. But let's go back to what you said, because that's on the extreme end, but you said versioning. So explain exactly what you mean by that, because obviously there are different companies out there. There's different backup services, and some services will hold revisions for 30 days, some 3 months, 6 months, a year, forever, and then multiple revisions. So explain what, in your opinion, is the best case for recovering that data if there happens to be a corruption that is actually backed up into your backup.
Sure. So best case scenario for restoring a file, as far as versioning is concerned, is that you have an infinite number of versions from the day that you started backing up until now. That way, you know, especially for something that isn't accessed very often, if it's been corrupt for a long time, you're going to have to, you know, figure out which day it was. And if you only have 30 days worth or 6 months worth, sometimes it's longer than that. It doesn't happen often, but it can. So, you know, we use and we resell and distribute Infrascale's SOS Online Backup, which has the unlimited versioning, and it only counts the space from the first and the last version. on the backup. So, you know, from the day that we started backing up until that day, every single time that there's a change, there's a new version uploaded, and we're able to go back and get that for the client.
Okay, great. So basically for that particular scenario, there are plans already in place that are either you've put in place or they're automatically put in place because of the things that have happened.
Right. And all of these scenarios, and this is why, you know, the rant that I made on the YouTube channel and the rant that I made on last week when I was talking about how, you know, it's our job to educate our clients, right? We need to educate our clients that they need to have these types of processes in place as well. It's not just IT companies that need to worry about all of these fail safes and the what if scenarios, and you know, all of these things have to be in place for our clients as well. So, you know, something as simple as a backup seems simple to us. We need to educate our clients on that. So what happens if I get hit by a bus? Well, maybe LastPass is going to be a good solution for our clients too. You know, I think that whatever we're talking about in this show, we should be telling our clients.
Absolutely, I agree. All right, Shane, so let's talk about, you go in to do a virus removal, and the virus removal all of a sudden goes to a blue screen. Now, do you have a contingency plan backup for that? And you don't have to use that exact scenario, but I'm trying to paint a picture of you that's something that you do all the time. You remove viruses. It's not a big deal. So what are some of the contingency plans? Do you have something in place, or do you kind of just make it up?
I used to make it up, but I think it's a lot more simpler where I start planning ahead. And this is just something I preach to all my clients. Backup is very important, whether if you got stuff. I don't say cloud is the backup solution. I tell them it's more like, you know, on the go, you're accessing stuff from multiple devices, but if that's all you can do, have a backup there. Like, have a copy of something up there, because if your computers die on you, then where is you going to get your critical database or your company files that are secret, you know, all your procedures, forms, whatever. But I think now, because I'm reading a lot more on ransomware is the biggest threat, you know, and just that alone can be a problem if I'm unable to clean that up. Because the only way you could defend against that is having a backup. And I actually have an appointment, I believe, on the 23rd with Datto, because I went to their Cleveland Roadshow. I'm not sure if you've seen them traveling around. And they were, you know, had a big, huge thing about their product. I'm like, well, let me give them a shout. And I went there to just watch the show, and they made an appointment with me this coming Wednesday, I believe. So I might be getting an account with them just for providing, you know, certain contingency plans for my customers. And just for me, even, you know, if I'm going to advertise this product to my clients, I think the smartest thing to do is to use it yourself so you can be a better prepare to support or answer questions when they need them to, you know, when they ask some questions about the product or what happens to their data. So I think having another solution in place for my contingency plans would be a lot better instead of just winging it. You know, anything could happen. I don't want to be caught in that mess anymore.
So here's what I'm hearing, and again, I set up these are kind of silly, simple scenarios, and people are probably going right now, Jeff, come on, people deal with that stuff all the time. Why are you talking about such simplistic things? But here's what maybe a lot of people have missed, or maybe don't even think about it in these terms. Sometimes contingency plans are set up ahead of time. In what we've just talked about, in both these different situations, we've talked about a backup solution that was pre-thought of and pre-done to protect the customer from basically something going catastrophic with their computer. You come in to do a simple QuickBooks database recovery, and it's not there. It can't get it fixed. It's not working. Oh, let's go to the backup. Or you come in to do a virus removal and you get a blue screen of death and that computer's gone. The hard drive just died. Everything's gone. It just failed out. Okay, we go to the backup. So when you look at contingency plans, sometimes you have to do it ahead of time in order to have that plan that makes sense. Because let's face it, in this industry, there's a lot of things that we do that, and there's been many things that I've come across that people will say, I have never seen that before. I've talked to engineers that will, at software companies, who go, I've never seen that before. Of which I go, I don't know how that's possible. Because I'm one customer out of, you know, millions, whatever. And so a lot of times, but we've got to go in and figure out, okay, how do we best fix this? And everything's fixable. As long as there's enough money, everything is fixable. So I think that, yeah, as far as contingency plans go, there's not a whole lot you can do other than have yourself set up ahead of time so that you can best protect that customer. Now, let's paint another little scenario, Chris. Let's say you're doing a remote support session.
All right.
And in this remote support session, you lose connection.
Okay.
And a customer can't even get you connected. Now what do you do? Do you have a plan for that?
Are they local?
Maybe.
Maybe. Well, that
yeah, let's say depends. Let's say they're local.
They're local?
I'll be easy
okay,
for
perfect.
It.
So if I cannot walk them through getting reconnected, then we got one of two options. We either move this to an on-site service and they're going to pay the on-site rates, or they're going to drop it off at the UPS store. I'll pick it up and they'll pay the same rates they would have for remote. But it's something that's been pre-planned. It's something that I have a process in place for.
Awesome. Okay, cool. And again, it's just thinking about this stuff ahead of time. If this happens, what do I do? So, good. All right, let's see. Man, that was a quick one.
Well, that's what you get for bringing such a simple conversation, such as, what do I do if I get hit by a bus, Jeff?
Well, it's true. I mean, but these are things that a lot of times I've been preaching this for a long time, but we are generally firefighters. And I've seen it from seasoned veterans that are in this business to brand new people that are just starting up. There's a fire over here. I'm going to put it out. Oh, there's a fire over here. I'm going to put it out. And so we run around putting out fires all the time. A lot of times we don't think of all these things that we could pre-set up to protect ourselves, or we tell ourselves, I don't have enough time to do that. I'm too busy. And it's the same thing where people run into this, and I see this all the time too. People will let their customer dictate the hardware that they're going to allow them to put in. Or a lot of times a person will get cheap hardware to put in that customer's building or office or whatever to save them money. But here's the thing. The cheaper hardware usually doesn't last as long. There are inherent problems with it. So instead of just forcing our customers to get something that's more robust that we can actually work with, what we ended up doing is we, again, run around like firefighters, putting a bunch of fires out. Because not for any fault of our own, other than we did not force our customer to get the proper equipment. We allowed them to tell us what they were going to install. Instead of going, well, you know what? If that's what you want to install, that's great. You can do that, and I'm going to move along. Because you can go find, and here's the thing, and we'll probably get into this in a few emails here in a little bit. You can tell people what they need that's going to best protect them. And you can say, this is a service I'm providing you. This is what I know is going to be best for you. And so here's why we're doing this. And here's what it's going to cost you. And if you don't want to do that, that's fine. There are enough customers that will appreciate just what you told that other customer, that they will actually take your service and keep your service,
mm-hmm.
especially if you keep it the same. But a lot of people just think, man, I got to break in. I got to get in. I got to keep it cheap. And I just read a scenario, might have been yesterday. Somebody was talking about basically a customer had left another tech and was coming to them, and they were charging basically the same rate. But when that customer went to leave that tech for substandard service, for whatever reason, that tech said, okay, We'll cut it by 50%. Really? But all they really had to do was just do the job, whatever that entailed for whatever the contract was between them and the client. They didn't. They didn't, you know, they weren't up to the client's standards, so the client moved on, and it's still paying the same amount of money for better service. So that stuff happens all the time. It's not a one use case scenario. So anyways, is there any other situations that either one of you can come up with as far as something that might be a contingency plan that maybe you've been bitten by before and you learned something and said, I need to change this. So the next time this happens, I am prepared.
Yeah. Make sure that somebody knows where you are if you're going on site and what your approximate schedule should be.
Mm.
So if I'm going on site, now, if she's listening to this right now, she'll probably yell at me later for not always telling her everything. But for the most part, my wife knows where I'm going, right? If I have an on-site somewhere, you know, she has access to my calendar. I tell her, hey, these are the places that I'm going today, because if I don't come back, that's going to be important. So it seems like a bit more of an extreme situation, but that is something that you need to plan for. Somebody should know where you're going and what your itinerary is in case it doesn't turn out that way.
Shane, anything you can think of that's, you know, because obviously you've been in the business for a while, but obviously there was things that when you were newer or even things, man, I've seen it all the time. I'm still learning stuff all the time, new every day. But is there anything you can think of that, hey, I here's what happened and here's what I changed in my contingency plan so that this situation didn't happen again?
I mean, as far as anything, it's just having a backup plan, because one of my clients, I probably mentioned this before, is I would tell her that she needs to back up her certain client database of hers. And without that, she does have no access to any of their private information, their, you know, private information as far as their social security numbers or the notes she took on their status. And, you know, that's very important to her. And without that information, she can't refer to nothing or do anything. She's completely, like, just unfunctional. But she's so busy and she forgets that she needs to do that manual backup, because that software she used, she can only do a manual backup. It's not like I can have, you know, another backup solution in place, but in that software, there is designed weird, but she has to do it. And I know back then I would, you know, have a note right there, but I would leave it up to her to remember too, instead of like, hey, you do that. And I think I actually blame myself too, because her computer went down and the hard drive died. So her data was on that drive. There was no backup, at least nothing current to the season just started. So that was a big, huge problem. And she was down for a whole week. But I just feel maybe if I would have stuck to her backup, she would have remembered a lot more, instead of me just saying, here's a reminder, put it on her monitor and just let it go. And it cost me two nights of, I got it back, you know, and but it was just the fact that I should have been a lot more preactive myself.
Well, okay, let's look at that a little more pessimistically, though. I don't expect users to remember anything, ever. I don't expect them to remember to run an antivirus. I don't expect them to remember to run a backup. I don't expect them to remember not to write their password and stick it on the bottom of their keyboard. All right. What I expect is that the more I can automate, the better my customer is going to be. I don't beat myself up about a customer not remembering to back up. That was their responsibility if they didn't want to pay for an automatic backup. And an automatic backup isn't really that expensive. So I completely understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I really do need to take that stance that, look, I told you. And if you didn't do it, I'm really sorry that that happened. I will be as empathetic as you want me to be. But I'm not going to accept responsibility for something that you're not paying me to have responsibility for.
Well said. Or, like Jeff would say, you can't fix stupid. Matter of fact, you can't even slow it down. I've tried. And so, anyways, I think those are good points. And sometimes all we can do is, our job is to, as Chris has said, to educate the customer, let them know what's available. If they decide not to take those things, there's only so much we can do. And they have to have that understanding. Now, again, most people will, they have this thing where they think that you know all things technological-wise, and no matter what happens, you'll be able to save their bacon. And a lot of times, not a lot, but there are some times that that is not, in fact, true, unless you have those processes already in place.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, we can pull them out of almost any fire that they got, as long as they still have internet and they still have the building that they're in and electricity.
There you go.
After that, if they've followed everything that we've recommended for them, absolutely, we'll be able to get their buns out of the fire. Right. If I have to go down to Best Buy and pick up a bunch of computers to drag it down there and restore all their backups so that they can be up and running that day, that can happen. But they need to have the backup in the first place.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. I think we have talked enough about this, and a lot of people, everyone here has come up with some good ideas and things to think about and to, you know, make ourselves better and to always be looking forward to coming up with a new plan that's going to protect you. Remember, just because you've been doing something for the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years doesn't mean that there's no room for improvement. There is always room for improvement. So, if it's just little things that make your life easier, make the customer's life easier, again, this is where the money's at, and this is where you can, you know, have that win-win situation where people are paying you a premium for doing the right things, and also they're getting taken care of at a premium level. So. All right, let's take another quick ad here, and we will go ahead and go into our email section and live calls. All right, so let's see. All right, if you guys want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/computerrepairpodcast, and we have a new patron, Rick Hollacy. And I know I might have messed your last name up, and I do apologize, Rick, but anyways, that's what it looks like, and I do appreciate you giving to the show. And if you would like to give to the show, you can go to patreon.com/computerrepairpodcast, and you can find us in there. And what you can do is, I didn't realize this, but after digging around a little bit, I've decided to do a per episode, which a lot of people have told me I probably shouldn't do it this way. So we do 4 episodes, no more, sometimes less, every month. So that's $4 a month. And it comes right into the to the Patreon account and helps to pay for some of the things that we do here, equipment, mics, things like that. And so software that we use, whatever. And so, but obviously the more patrons we get, the more I would like to do some special things, giveaways and different things like that. I'd like to take some of that money, put it aside, and be able to, you know, give some stuff away to the audience. So with that, if you guys go over there, and we're going to have some other things down the road that we're going to also do. I think we'll talk about it here in the probably next couple months, once things slow down a little bit for me, and we'll get those things going. But there's a lot of good things for being a patron. But one of the things you can do is, let's say you only want to give $1 a month. You can actually set up a maximum in Patreon. So if you say, I'll give $1 per episode, but my max is $1 per month, then the most you will get charged is $1 for that month. So if you want to give $1 a month, that's $12 a year to help this show make it better, all those types of things, we would really appreciate it. So I will put that out there. And I appreciate all the people that are coming on board as of late and giving to the show. So, and I want to thank all of our other Patreon supporters for your continued support. I appreciate each and every one of you. All right, so let's go ahead and let's answer some emails and take some phone calls. Phone lines are open. The call-in number is 697-0162. All right, let's go into our first email. All right, this is, let's see, it says, hello, I've recently been working on my tablet, customizing it, cleaning it, etc. I wanted to customize what icons I had on my taskbar and found one that says IGFX tray or IGFX tray module. I had no idea what that was, so I looked it up and apparently it has something to do with the graphics. The only thing that confused me is what I read is that it's mostly used for graphics cards, but tablets don't use graphics cards. So this is something that I need. Is this something I need? Can I remove it and have no graphics problems? Or is it some kind of malware? Jonathan. Thank you, Jonathan, for the email. And Jonathan had emailed us before, and he was having some tablet problems and some upgrading there in the past. I did email him back, and I basically said that the IGFX tray module is usually something that sits down for shortcuts in the tray on your desktop. And so you can get to the graphics card controls quicker. Is it needed? Not really.
It does optimize the Intel, never mind. I wouldn't take it off. How about that?
Okay, and that's probably fair. And I don't think that it's probably taking up a whole lot of resources anyways, right?
No, it's pretty lightweight. And I mean, really, it's only going to affect the Intel cards anyway.
Well, this is where it's a little bit confusing. I guess if it was, and I forgot what type of tablet it was that he was talking about, and you're right, it might be an Intel chip in there. But everything has a graphics card or graphics chip, whether it be a laptop, a desktop. Now, there are standalone graphics cards that are in desktop computers for gaming and such, but everything usually has some sort of at least onboard graphics nowadays.
Unless it doesn't have a screen.
Yeah, then it wouldn't be a tablet.
Right.
So anyways, you could leave it there. I don't know. See, on the desktop, I know for sure you could get rid of that and you're not going to have any problems whatsoever. But on a tablet, I've never seen it, so I'm not really sure if you would have any problems. To me, it's just a shortcut to the controls for the graphics card or graphics chip. Shayna, you got anything on that?
I was just taking a look at my tablet. It's an Asus, some little low-end, but I didn't see any controls that I would try to control, so I'm not sure.
Well, let's put it this way. If you disable that service on some Intel integrated chips, so when it's the integrated write-in, it could stop the graphics card from working properly. Not that it will stop Windows from loading. Windows will still load the built-in built-in generic driver, but there are some drivers that won't load without it. It's not that often. I think that tablets and all-in-ones are going to be your most common issues with that. So I just leave it alone as a rule, though. It's not doing anything wrong. It's not using a whole lot of resources, and it does add some functionality to the graphics card.
Okay. I think those are great answers. All right, let's move on to our second email. All right, good morning. My name is Roberto, first-time listener. I just opened up my computer repair business after so many years of doing it for free for family. Now it's time to get paid. Good for you, Roberto. That's awesome. All right, so what are your thoughts on loaner laptops for clients? Thank you, Roberto. Thank you for the email, Roberto. And Chris, loaner laptops, what do you say?
Fantastic idea. Make sure that you get a credit card number from the customer before they take it. Make sure that you have a system image of the way that the computer was before you handed it out. And make sure that you have the appropriate licenses on that laptop before it goes to the customer.
All right. Shayna, how about you?
I guess that'll be a little bit more administrative work on my end, but like he was saying, if I did, it'll be only clients that I trust and know of, and then ensure that there's some type of collateral, definitely. So if they want to take off and run with it, at least I get, or at least make an attempt to, recoup the funds or whatever, or loss. as far as that device, but I wouldn't think you at least need to have some type of security layer in place if you're going to start giving out equipment to clients, or just make sure you have an established relationship if you're going to offer that feature in your business. That's all I got to say.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to be the old curmudgeon and say it is a big, humongous waste of time, and I would not do it whatsoever. Here's the thing. If your customer cannot live without their computer for a few days, tell your customer they should go get a life, and they'll be all right.
Wow. I keep forgetting how little business clients you have compared to your residentials, though, man.
I don't care. You know, here's the thing, though. A lot of business clients, especially the ones that I do deal with, they have multiple computers. It's not a huge thing where, in most of the time, if you really look at what clients are doing, what are business clients doing? They're either using software that either has something to do with, your tax information, QuickBooks, Peachtree, whatever, or accounting, all your accounting information, or you're using some proprietary software to get into. Maybe it's web-based, maybe it's not, maybe it's, you know, on-premise. Doesn't matter, but you're using something where you're getting into it and you have to use that database to do whatever it is your day-to-day. Most small business clients spend time on the internet. Their web-based stuff that they use for maybe doing construction, you know, quotes and different things like that. A lot of stuff is not on-premise anymore. So for a lot of these people, it's like, hey, get up off that computer, give it to me, and go sit over on that computer. It's not that big a deal.
Assuming that they're big enough for that, though, I have plenty of one-man shows that I do business work for, and if their computer went down, like specifically their laptop, if their laptop goes down, that's like 75% of their work needs to be done on a laptop because they have to be mobile, you know? So we have two loaner laptops for that reason. They get that laptop, they take it out with them, and they're able to continue working without much of an interruption. So that's a huge add-on service that you can charge a rental for if you wanted to, or just to be the reason why they come to you. So, you know, I'm going to make the argument there that if you know some small business clients, an i5 laptop is a really cheap investment to keep them happy.
Okay. So here's what I'm going to say. If you're a business owner, I'm going to do a Chris. You need to have a backup.
They do have a backup.
But it's not me. You need to have your own backup.
And you know what? The $50 extra that they're going to pay for that laptop is going to pay itself off pretty quick.
I think both ways are perfectly fine, to be honest with you. It's just, there are certain things I don't want to do. A lot of people know.
I want to fight with you some more about this.
Wait a minute. I don't want to go outside of a 6-square-mile radius. Now, people travel 50 miles to go see a customer. That's great. Sucks to be you. I don't. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Time, you know, all that. Anyways, and I don't like being in a car. But other than that, I think you can do it either way. I just don't want to follow up on that type of stuff. And I think from what you're saying, Chris, if you're talking about an established customer, or what Shana was saying earlier, is that if you're talking about somebody that's trusted and you know them, you've worked with them, maybe that's a different use case scenario. And maybe you do have those loaners. Again, though, to set it up specifically for whatever somebody's using it for, I think also has its own problems. Unless all they're doing, like I said, is getting online, going to their web-based portal for whatever software they're using, or doing something, QuickBooks, whatever. You know, are you going to set up their QuickBooks account on a computer so that they can do their accounting on that computer? Probably not. So what are they really going to use it for? They're going to check email. Okay, I'm used to using Outlook. Now you're going to have to set it up for their Outlook account because that's what they're used to. They're not going to want to go to the web-based portal for that, right? So
So I've told you about Zinstall, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So tell everybody again.
So, okay. So Zinstall transfers files and programs between computers. If you wind up in a situation like what you're talking about, the way that the license structure works is if you've used it on a computer before, it doesn't use up another license. So for example, the loaner laptop, it doesn't continue to use licenses for me to transfer the customer's data from their existing computer over onto that laptop. Pull the drive out, slave the drive, copy everything over, hand it back to them, and now they've got a computer to use while you're waiting for parts. There are ways to do it, is what I'm saying. It's not, it doesn't need to be as difficult or as complicated as that, especially when you can just set it up that way.
Yes, and I understand what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
And I partially agree with you, but partially don't agree with you because, again, it's a big pain in the butt as far as
Jeff, if we agreed on things on this show, do you remember what happened the last time we agreed? The whole show went silent for like a minute while we figured out what to say next.
I know. It's terrible. No, I like I said, you could go either way. I'm on the side of, yeah, no thanks. It's not something else I want to deal with. Again, if you're going to charge a premium for a service like this, it makes sense. Hey, that's fine. I'm going to transfer your stuff over here. It's going to take me a minimum of an hour. You know, that's $150 an hour, whatever it is, right? And that's what I'm going to charge you on top of. So really, when you're looking at all this, I think what you would have a lot of people say, even small business owners, even one-person businesses, would say, nah, it's all right. I'll deal without my computer for a few days.
Maybe. I'm good. Maybe. And that's okay. It's okay if they say no. If they don't want to pay for the service, then they don't pay for the service. Right. It's the same as the backup.
Right? But then one other thing you forgot about, too, is eventually you're going to have to upgrade these loaner laptops every once in a while to keep them kind of current.
That depends on how often they're used. It depends on what operating system is on there, too. Right. So, you know, I already replaced the hard drives, the solid state drives. They're good to go there. And they're running Windows 10. The only time that will become an issue is if and when Microsoft decides to start putting hardware restrictions on the Windows 10 updates. Because if Windows 10 is going to be the last operating system, I guess the question there becomes, is it eventually going to stop my computer from updating because it's too old?
Probably not.
Probably not. So, you know, that we're going to have to see if that becomes an issue. And if our standard i5 8 gig RAM setups are not going to be good enough anymore.
Right. Okay. All right. All right. We beat that one to death. Like I tell my wife, and this irritates her, we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
That's fine, Jeff. I'll still call you.
All right, here's another email. This is from Anonymous. All right, in a few of the Facebook groups I'm a member of, I read where some techs are charging extremely high prices for products. As one example, an antivirus costs $40 in the big box store. They're already getting a reseller discount, but they charge up to 3 times what it costs online or in store. I've seen similar pricing hikes on other products. I'm not saying we should price match the online or big stores, but we shouldn't rip the customer off. In my opinion, by doing this, it makes us look bad and gives other small shops a bad name. The last thing we want to do is make the big box stores look like the best option and more trustworthy. Go, Chris.
You know how to set the... Were you about to plug your ears?
No, I'm not plugging my ears. I'm listening. Go ahead.
All right. So here's the thing. First off, you can't sit there and tell somebody not to charge what they can charge. Okay. You charge what the market will bear. And if the market is going to bear you charging 3 times what it costs, through retail, clearly they're selling it, or else they wouldn't be selling it at that price. They might be offering an extra service with it. Maybe they're offering virus removals to go along with it. Maybe they're offering the install to go along with it. You know, we don't have the details for that, but what we do know is that they're selling it. So people must be happy with that, or they wouldn't continue. They'd have to lower the price. Right. So no, I'm not going to apologize for any pricing that I use. I'm never going to apologize for my prices. What I am going to make sure of is that I can sit back and say, yes, I can sell it at this price. Yes, I am worth the price that I'm charging. And if you don't like that, you can go to the cheap shop and you can do whatever you want over there. When you come back, I'll be more than happy to help you.
All right. Shayna?
He pretty much sang my tune. Well, that's the thing, because at first I did worry about, am I charging too much? But at the same time, I'm putting my mind on it's a convenience, because if you're not going to do it, you know, as far as updating your third-party applications, keeping up with your own computer as far as maintaining it, making sure that, you know, your browsing safe, your antivirus is always up to date daily, and you expect to just run and magically fix your computer or protect it. If you're not going to do that and take look at it every day, then you want me to, then you're paying for the convenience. You're paying for me to do your work, your job. And at a certain time, I do have to look at, well, how much is this going to cost me if I'm like now MCSoft, you know, me just worrying about how much that I'm paying for their licenses to offer my clients as well, you know. And I just pretty much just think about it. It's a convenience. I'm doing your job, you know. And you're not only you're getting that, you're getting the fact that you can call me whenever you want to. Any questions? If you have an issue, I'll be watching your computer, making sure, and then selling them on being proactive instead of reactive. You're saving your time of being down by just making sure your computer's working every day. And that's a lot more beneficial than you scurrying around trying to find a computer tech at the last minute. And hopefully by the time, you know, you find somebody, you haven't lost a lot or a lot of time or a lot of money because you didn't have these type of protocols in place in the first place. So I just try to sell them on that you're saving time and money if you just do it this way. And it is a convenience to you that I'm doing it. And I don't have a life because I'm watching your computer, you know.
And I think a lot of times, even if you're not doing any type of monitoring, but you're upselling your product and you stand behind a product and you're saying, this is what I recommend because it's going to do the best job possible, in my opinion. And it's worked for many of my other customers, and I believe it'll work for you. And here's the price I'm charging. You could go to a big box store. You could get it cheaper. You could get it cheaper online. But here's the thing that a lot of people don't realize is that, and we explained this before in our pricing podcast that we had a while back, is that there are different areas. And it really doesn't matter what area you're in. There's people that can afford certain things that are absolutely willing to afford that because they know, like, and trust somebody, or they believe whatever the person is telling them. Good, bad, or indifferent doesn't really matter. Those things, if they are found out, what ends up happening most of the time, if somebody is being taken advantage of and being charged too much, they'll probably move on to somebody else. In my opinion, that's a good thing. And then that person that is what we would call overcharging, they have less customers, but they're making usually more money and they're enjoying what they do and they're good at that. And that's fine. There are different types of businesses. If you're in an area that has, let's say, 100,000 people, there's only so many fish out there, still a lot of fish, okay? If you're in an area that has 1 million people, which is, okay, let's do the math here, 10 times the amount, okay, just 10 times the amount, you can see that there's a lot more fish there. So you take an area that has a median income of whatever it is. Let's say it's the median income in both those areas is 70,000. Let's just say household incomes. And you look at the area that has 1 million people at the median of 70,000 means 500,000 make more than 70, 500,000 make less than 70. But if you take the area that has 100,000, then you're going to have 50,000 that make over 70 and 50,000 that make less than 70. So you see how it's a humongous difference of the amount of people in disposable income and what people are willing to pay for services. It doesn't matter what area you're in. You will always find somebody that is willing to pay whatever price that you want to give them, especially if they know, like, and trust you. So that's one. Two, a lot of times go in and find out what the average big box store actually sells a ticket for. Because there's a big box store that basically you go in, and most people know it, got a big yellow sales tag, but you go in and you're going to pay them $199 for antivirus and basically a year of monitoring on that antivirus before they will even look at your computer. Could be a cracked screen, doesn't matter. They won't look at it unless you pay them the $199. So your average ticket in a lot of these places is $400+, which is the way it is. And you know how many people go to these stores and pay that in every area I've been in? A lot.
Oh, a lot. And you know what the secret is there? Be worth what you're charging. It's that simple. If you're going to convince people that, hey, to walk in through the front door, you need to have $200, you just need to show them what the value of that $200 is. And people will pay it.
They'll pay it even if there is no value.
That's true. There are people who are going to pay it without the value, but I think you're going to find a lot more recurring people if you do.
Exactly. So I think you can find a happy medium. Again, if somebody across town with a larger population is able to charge X amount of dollars more than you're able to charge, you're talking about two different areas. So they really don't correlate anyways. So it's hard to fit what we do inside of a box, inside of a city, inside of, you know, a business in order to make sense for everybody. That's why there's different scenarios. There are people that are doing fine with their business who maybe have lost leaders of maybe they charge $50 for virus removal. But they get somebody in the door and they get somebody to come in and like them and trust them. And, you know, now all of a sudden that $50 virus removal turned into thousands of dollars worth of work for the year. So if you have a virus or an antivirus software that you think is good, and that person is not able to go on the internet and find it themselves or go to another customer or another business and get it from another business, and they like this business they're dealing with and they trust what they say, if they can charge three times the amount, they can charge three times the amount. Again, the people that, you know, a lot of times those same people, you're going to get the majority of them who are going to, once they find out they can get it someplace cheaper and it's the same quality, the same service and all that, they'll move to that cheaper business, which is a win-win. And then the person that's charging a lot will just keep a handful of customers, but makes a lot more money doing that with less headache. So it's a different scenario. All right, let's go ahead and what do we got here? I think we got one more email. And this would be a good one, I think, to end off on anyways. We got a couple more, but one we got to save for next week. All right, so let's see. This is, says, what's up, Podnuts? I'm just reading like the email says. All right, so how do I start building up a board level repair business? It's been what I wanted to do for a long time. I have 7 pounds of iPhones. I collected data to see how much money I would make if I turned them around and sold them on eBay for repair or spare parts. The total was $660, so I would still profit. That's good. You're doing the math ahead of time. I assumed if I could really fix only a handful of them, I calculated what I could earn. Now I'm at the early stage of planning the business. What equipment do I need to start out? What don't I need to prevent wasting money? I'm also learning the science behind it to have the knowledge of all board components to know what they do and why. What essential equipment do I need to ensure I can fix any problem when I find one? I don't want to have to put a device to the side because of my failure of not having that tool. Let's see. So I think let's answer that question. What equipment? So if you're doing iPhone repair, which it sounds like this is what he wants to do, board level repair, what type of equipment do you need to have for that?
I mean, I guess it really depends on what he's looking for. Because when you say board level repair and you tell me board level repair, what I'm thinking is, you know, desoldering a chip off of a board and replacing the chip. And I'm honestly going to say that you won't make money doing that. At least not enough, not as a single person. It's cheaper to replace the part than it is to repair them most of the time these days. So yeah, I don't really have much of an answer on that. I mean, you need a soldering gun. You'd need something like the iFixit screwdriver set so you can take off small screws. You're going to want a soldering vacuum to make it faster for you to be able to pull those out. Probably some magnifying glasses because some of them are going to be pretty crazy. But like I said, I personally couldn't see a business like that moving forward if that's what you're looking to do.
Yeah, I kind of agree there. I'm not really sure. Again, I don't even like doing screen replacements on those things. And that's probably the majority of what you're going to do. You know, if you have something that's like an iPhone that's water damaged, you're going to, what will Apple tell? Apple would tell you they need to replace every component inside there. Even if it's a laptop. If one portion of the board got wet, they will replace everything inside that laptop. So, anyways, I'm not a hot air rework station. Again, like you said, the iFixit stuff. I mean, you can make money at board level repairs because you can get good enough and quick enough at it that you can turn these things around if you know what you're looking for.
Sure.
And so what I would say is, if that's something you want to do, that's awesome. I think it's a great learning process in order to do it. And I think that you're going to have to get some education, whether it be through YouTube, through some online classes, as far as getting this type of work. I don't know if any schools would have any of that information. As far as I know, there's a lot of good stuff on iFixit. You know, they have PDFs and among PDFs on how to do replacements and teardowns and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, replacing parts, though, like we're talking about replacing components, not repairing components. And yeah, that kind of stopped in the mid 80s. You know, when it started to become more and more affordable to replace a motherboard than it was to replace
Actually, believe it or not, there are still businesses out there that are doing board level repair, and that's the majority of their business, and they're making phenomenal money.
That's crazy. You know what? Get some of them on the show then. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I'm just saying that I want to hear their stories because I want to know how they're doing that.
Well, and here's the thing. So a lot of people don't realize this, but the one reason I've done many, many businesses over my entire life, more businesses than I can shake a stick at. But one of the reasons I picked towards the end of my career is I picked computer repair because this is something that I could do into my late years if I so choose to do that. And so because I know a lot of these people, they have this pie in the sky dream that they're going to retire and whatever. They're fooling themselves, but whatever. So the reality is I could do this in my 70s and 80s if I wanted to. Not a big deal. It's not like I'm not on a roof. I'm not rebuilding walls. I'm not tiling. I'm not doing all these things that I used to do. I'm not standing on scaffolding, painting, mudding, and taping. I'm not doing all that stuff. So this was a business that I looked at that I could use my brain, keep my brain going, and do it for a long period of time. And so because of that, this is why I got into this type of business. So for me, going back in, I still do DC jack repairs, and I still replace screens on laptops that are not glued to the plastic or glued to the digitizer and that are not glued in. And so there are certain things I just won't do because to me, especially as a one-man shop, it's not beneficial for me to do that. So I'm not going to. I'm going to pick the easier stuff. I'm going to do the software. I'm going to do the networking. I'm going to do the stuff that takes some brain power. And not saying this other stuff doesn't take brain power. It's just different brain power that I'm not willing to devote to make this happen. But there are other people. That's what they're skilled at doing. And that's awesome. I love troubleshooting problems. I just don't want to do board. And I've had people come and they want me to replace a little capacitor on a motherboard. I'm like, we can get that motherboard for $50. Yeah, could I put solder across there and make the connection? And chances are it will probably work. Absolutely. Am I going to do that? Absolutely not. Because then I'm responsible for it because I touched it. So, yeah, I'm probably going to be more of the replace parts type person than anything else. All right, let's move on with this email, though. Let's see. It says, I need to put together a business plan and know what hardware I need so I can calculate what I need to get a loan. These phones are going to have a wide array of problems, so I'm going to learn a lot through diagnosing them to know what about the common problems. I see your product on how to start a business. No matter the business, like my cell phone repair and board level repair service, will your product still cover the basics of my business as well? And I'm assuming, number one, it's not my kit. I'm assuming he's talking about the Technibble computer business kit as far as the paperwork to get you started in your business with contracts and checklists and all that stuff. And yes, there is stuff in there for that. It's all pretty much the same if you're doing a service type business. Actually, there's a lot of services that could probably use that same kit and change a few words in there, and it would absolutely apply to whatever it is they do. That's actually from Bryce Whitty over at Technibble. So we just have it on our website as an affiliate. All right, it says, I hope the loan pans out. If not, I'm going to be stuck. I can't get help from anywhere else, and I know I could start up with just $800. Your expertise on business would be very valuable. I don't know anything about the subject, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on my situation and how I can begin. I am unsure how to build myself to be accessed like those super geniuses on your show. Don't drink and drive, McGee. Thank you, McGee, for that email. And the good explanation of what it is you're thinking about. So, Chris, what does he need to get started?
Well, look, if you want to go the loan route, the first thing you need to do is check your own, do your own checks, right? Do you have a good credit rating? Because if you don't have a good credit rating, then it's going to be very difficult for you to do this on your own through a bank. So I want to lay that expectation out there. I didn't start my company with a loan. I started my company by, spending my own money. And that's just the way it had to go. But as far as equipment, it depends on the type of work that you want to do, really. If you really want to do software repair, then the biggest thing that you want to start out with is your own computer. You're going to want to have an example of the software that you're trying to pair. Like if you're going for Outlook repair, you want to make sure you have Office. You're going to want to make sure that you have some sort of a filing system, whether it be using Excel, using a ticketing system, paperwork orders like the Technibble Business Kit would be a great way to start that. There are paperwork orders that you can print off and use there. Printer, paper, ink, screwdrivers, check out the iFixit Repair Kit. It's a wonderful kit. It has just about everything that you need in there as far as screwdrivers, anti-static wristbands, stuff like that. And a mode of transportation if you're going to do on-site.
And as far as going back to the iFixit stuff, I think that is, if you're getting into that type of business, and I know a lot of those people over there actually do board level repairs. There are people I've seen over there that they're just phenomenal at it. So that is probably a great resource and a great community to get involved in. If that's going to be your focus, is the small form factor computers, phones, things like that.
Yeah.
That group over there is, they're going to be able to show you the tips and tricks and how to, how to desolder and solder and all this type of stuff. I don't think this stuff that you need to have is going to cost you thousands of dollars, but I am more of the type of person that I'm going to bring in what I need. And as I go, I'm going to order the different things, the different tools that I need to have.
Yeah. And it's not like you can't start off with the not cheap. Please do not, confuse less expensive with cheap, but the less expensive alternative of whatever the big tool is to start off with. It'll take you longer, whatever the tool is going to be or whatever the software is, it's probably going to take you longer if you get a less expensive version of it. But as you build your own equity, you can always upgrade your equipment later. And maybe, eBay the old stuff or use it for training for new people when new people come in, train them on the old tools first before you let them play with the new fancy ones. Don't limit yourself to making sure you get the $1,000 soldering iron. You can get away with the $200 soldering iron for the first little while until you can ramp yourself up to that level.
$1,000. Actually, the hotter rework stations are a couple $100. The soldering iron I started with was a $999 Radio Shack soldering iron, which doesn't get very hot.
That's fantastic, Jeff. I'm super glad that your American prices really help you down there in the not Canada.
Oh. I'm sorry you pay that Canadian tax. That's not my fault. Move down here, buddy.
Oh, yeah, I'll get right on that.
We're only 4 hours away. Come on down.
Yeah, next time I go to the hospital, we'll see who has to spend more money.
We won't go into that because not me either. Anyways, yeah, that's a whole nother story. All right, so I think with that, I think we're going to go ahead and I know Shayna was dropping in and out, but we'll go ahead and end off the show here. So, Shayna, if you could give one parting thought to the audience and let people know where they could find you.
Oh, well, there's good old Facebook, Red Agent Solutions. I'm not using my Twitter quite, but that's another way of, you know, direct messaging me, as well as, of course, my website, redagentsol.com. And you can take a look at, you know, my website, the prices, and, you know, just contact me there. That's pretty much it. You can say hi when I'm on Facebook. I won't mind.
Okay. Awesome. Well, appreciate you coming out and sharing with us today. It's been awesome.
Cool.
All right. And Chris, give us one parting thought and let people know where they can find you.
Well, one parting thought is that this show is something that you should listen to every week. That's right.
That's good.
All right. So my name is Chris Carruthers. I am here from Remote Support Tech Team. We're a white label IT company. So if your company needs help with its customers, give me a call. Number here, 866-568-2813. You can also email us at info@rstechteam.com.
Awesome. And if you want, you can come join us live for the Computer Repair Podcast every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern over at podnest.com, Computer Repair Podcast Live. Join in on the conversation by calling in live and hanging out in the chat room. You can also send an email to podnuts@podnuts.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-697-0162. We have audio available over at podnuts.com or subscribe using your favorite podcatcher. You can be notified when the show is live by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Computer Repair Podcast. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts, the Computer Repair Podcast. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.